Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Josh English of the Boston-based band Six Going on Seven. The group recently released their first album in over 20 years. Titled Human Tears, the LP bridges the gap between the group's early sound and its current seasoned state. In this conversation, English discusses how he and his bandmates James Bransford and Will Bartlett made the decision to move forward with new music, his lifelong passion for his craft, and what the future holds for the trio. That's Josh English of Six Going on Seven on Into Music, coming up now. When did you know that you were going to get back in and make a record?
To be fair, I think the sort of parameters that we had set, kind of maybe without articulating them clearly, but kind of knew, was that we didn't want to be a band that just came out and kind of did the Mortgage Core tour, like just the nostalgia, like one. That's not to disparage those who do. It's just, I think that because the band was never a huge commercial band, what we really held on to and what we felt was our strongest suit was sort of being a band's band and the creative process being so integral to anything. So I think that we knew that whether it was like a 7-inch or whatever, that we had to make something so it didn't just feel like a victory lap. I think to some degree it was pretty organic because the last solo record I did, Outlaw Adjacent, Will was the drummer on the whole thing. He and I had rehearsed for it, and I'd feed him songs via like a garage band with like a loop idea or whatever. And then we talk about stuff, and I know him so well, and like through our playing DNA, that I knew kind of what he would do anyway. And then we get in his basement and just kind of hash it out. And some of the songs we did on that record were like, we'd work on it for 10 minutes and then we'd do it, you know, and get like a good take. He's very, very solid. And so it would just be like missing a part or like, oh, what's that accent or what have you. And in doing that, he had mentioned, I had been talking to James, as had he, and I just said, I'm going to have James come in and play guitar on this song. And James ended up playing on, I think, like 3 songs on the record, and we kept him on 2, because 2 were just like the ones that really resonated for me. In that process, I had just said, hey, you know, we should do this now. Like not immediately, but now while we're here, this is such an easy thing. And we have such, you know, we had natural chemistry and we also put in a ton of work in the rehearsal space. As silly as that sounds, like our social lives were not exclusively, but but very close to exclusively getting together and rehearsing and creating. Playing, like writing songs that never made it out into the world and writing songs that did, and just, you know, that was our friendship, and that was a lot of years. And so we put in the sort of Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours as well in that regard. So a lot of it felt like, oh yeah, like a known quantity, not in a dismissive way, but in a very like nice way.
That was actually going to be one of my questions, because sometimes it happens that a band spends time apart and then the members have grown in different directions, and coming back to make music becomes very difficult.
I think, you know, and I'm just speaking for the third of the band, but I think that one of the touchstones that we've always had is we just truly love making music, period. And we loved even more making it together, kind of relying on our respective strengths and weaknesses and kind of filling in the gaps for each other. We just had a nice, there's a collective we in a very organic way when the three of us play together, almost anything. And so I feel like it's an easy fit in some regards. And so it's just timing. My God, we'd had 20 plus years off between, and I'd done stuff creatively with Will in the interim, but primarily solo stuff. And he played with me live for some solo dates and this and that, and then just friendship over the years. I wanted the parameters to be digestible because I know how overwhelming it gets with multiple coasts and kids and, you know, life work balance or lack thereof. So we started out writing for a 7-inch, and we didn't tell anybody. We were just doing it on our own, and we got 2 songs so quick, and we were on to like 3, 4, 5 ideas. And I think really early on, we just kind of pumped the brakes and said, let's just make a record. And when we're done, let's shop it. And when we're done with that, we'll announce it. So that was kind of the trajectory. And it was, you know, and we just kind of hoped that it would be a nice surprise. And also then without that inside or outside rather influence, it was just what we wanted it to be in the moment, which should be an evolution. I mean, objectively, in any, like what you talked about, the time passed and, you know, being later on in life and stuff. And also that's kind of how we operated before. The one time that we had a lot of involvement and a lot of like outside influence and money in the true sense was the one record that I kind of like, don't like how it all happened because of that mostly. Even though I think the songs were good, I think it was just a labored, you know, and that was like right before the end of the band or the hiatus or whatever term you want to apply.
You said something that for me is just, it's one of those things I think about all the time. When you said, you know, the kind of strengths and weaknesses in a band. And I think when I wanted to go out and play music as a younger person with other people, I was always kind of worried, like, well, I think that guy's better at bass than me, you know? And then you get in a garage and all of a sudden it's like, okay, my time isn't as good, but he's playing in a way that accentuate, you know, in a,
it's human. It's human. Absolutely. And I think also my strength individually, like at this point, is songwriting. There are better bass players, there are better singers, there are better, you know, and there's better songwriters as well. I feel like I've honed that strength and I understand arrangement and I know how to milk the most out of what we do, and kind of also maybe more specifically how to guide what we do well naturally and not sort of force it into some thing where it's like, well, that doesn't work for us. And I constantly see people, I'm like, oh, it's a hell of a guitar player or a hell of, you know, and those things they're almost like isolated things. They don't have lesser value to me. You know, there's some phenomenal, I mean, like I love jazz players. So there's great jazz players that have unbelievable heart and technical skill. But a lot of times in like the pop music landscape or rock or punk or any of that stuff, all which I align myself with in some capacity in terms of my love for it, it's really just about like, how are you, do you have a voice? Like a good writer, like does it resonate? And I think that you try to make it resonate for you. And again, it's like that selfish idea. And it's not like you're in a vacuum, but you try to make it resonate between the 3 of you or 4 of you or whatever your configuration is. And then if you feel like that's good, then it moves on to the next stage where somebody, you know, like in this case, Adam Taylor, the engineer of this record, and he and I have done every one of my solo records except for one. And then I've done a couple projects with him and odds and ends, like compilation things. So tons of recording at this point. It's the most. So between Adam Taylor and Brian McTernan, who the DC producer who did those early 6.7 records, that's sort of the most people I've recorded with. And now it's like, now the scale has tipped in more for Adam, just based on time elapsed more than anything. But he's one of those people that can come in and make suggestions and realizes that the band can write a song and that he doesn't need to help them with a chorus or like, hey, this middle 8 sucks or what have you, you know? It's more about treatment and sort of tempo at times, you know, those little things that we can kind of like feel when you get too myopic and you're in a practice space and doing it.
There was another thing you said in that too, that, you know, just talking about, oh, that person might be a great guitar player. A couple of years ago, I went to see a show and the opening band, I was like, that guy's a great guitar player, but he's not a musician. And then the headliner came out and it was like, he's a musician.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's such a different thing too, because why does maybe this is a not a great, well, it's a good one for me anyway, but like Leonard Cohen, for example, is like heartbreaking to me. You know, he's an incredible lyricist. He's really an author as much as he's a, you know, he's a lyricist almost more than he's a musician. But the treatment of his songs and the way that they're presented, whatever like he lacks in like vocal range, for example, like objectively, is totally, it's more than mitigated. It's obliterated by his absolute strength in these areas, and them just kind of shining a spotlight on this strength. And you listen to that stuff, and you're like, oh, God, you know. And I talk about this with James and Will and my other bandmates in my other band too, just like how much you can't always define what that thing is, but you know it. And it's almost like comedy, like what makes you laugh. There are certain things that make me laugh that if like I know somebody well and they're like, I hate that or whatever, I don't feel the same connection. It's terrible, but if they feel the same way, I'm like, yes, I want to like talk about it. And it's not a right or wrong situation, which is why it's so funny, but I think it's just because I feel so music and not just music, but music in the art space for sure, more than anything, just was such a huge compass for me in my life, and it influenced so much, and it did mitigate so much for me in the volatility of my early life and such that it's just I want everyone to feel the way I feel about stuff, which is clearly not objective, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, and that thing that you said too about, you know, having a voice and finding your voice, there's something also very empowering about that when you realize that you've got a point of view that's connecting with somebody else. And you might not know where that point of view came from, but there it is.
Yeah, and that's another thing too with that is the more what I've found as I've gotten older in writing is like the thing that is really uncomfortable to say. Like the thing that just seems like, oh, that like, you know, if you're trying to write like a protagonist in a book, to have any depth, they're flawed. They're not this like glowing whatever. I feel like if it's almost always a composite character. It's multiple vantage points and different things, but they're pulled from real things. So if something comes up and it feels like it sits like, ooh, like I don't love saying that. But because it feels very like, here it is, you know, like it feels like it's easy to go, like it all gets judged, but it's like committal versus like non-committal. I mean, people, there's a lot of turn of phrase and like clever things that they're funny. I mean, there was a whole trend of like this is not our wheelhouse per se, but like say Fall Out Boy and like these, you know, super long, like kitschy song title things where it's like kind of cool in one or two, but like 25, 30 songs later, you're like, wink, wink. It's like, but what are you really saying? It's like, it's a shtick. And so I think that like in writing, saying the thing before you can give yourself a chance to walk it back. You don't need to name names, but it's good. And I feel like the more you're a dimensional person, the more that resonates with somebody because they're real. It's a real feeling you're having, and you're not trying to cut the crusts off, then somebody else is going to align with it too, or it'll resonate, hopefully.
You know, you said going into the thing that's maybe a little anxiety provoking, but also sometimes knowing, like, if I just say it in the simplest terms, that's got maybe more power.
Yeah, and that's also something I've taken from like my favorite authors is I'll read something and I'll be like, oh, this person sounds like an awful human being right now, you know. Which we all can be at times in our life, but that's why it's so profound to me. I'm like, wow, and I'll revisit stuff and I'll be like, and then the next, you know, 2 pages later, and this works the same way in songs too. But 2 pages later, they'll do something else. It'll be like a poem or a short story or what have you, where it's a little more balanced, or it's about somebody else, or it's a perspective, and you kind of like, I don't know, you kind of feel some empathy for the person in that other one, where the other one you're just like objectively like awful, you know. And I think those things that you just say, like I said before, you know, I mean, you refine stuff, and I also do a lot of like dictating things. I used to do it on the tape recorder, a little handheld, long after handheld tape recorders were a thing. It went all the way through early solo records and stuff till it finally kind of broke on me, and then I didn't replace it. So now it's voice memos. But I write down stuff a lot of times too, and almost like maybe not a perfect analogy, but almost like dreams. Like things make sense in dreams that you wake up and you're like, that doesn't make any sense, but it made so much sense to me in the moment. And I knew it was a real thing. And I knew like there was a correlative thing that I'm missing. I feel like when you write down stuff, I'll come back to like a turn of phrase or like a line that I'm like, I need to write this down, and it won't fit in anything. And, you know, like 10 years later, 15 years later, I'll look at it and be like, oh, that's perfect for this. This is what, or maybe even more relevant at times, I'll understand it. I'll go like, that's what that was. It's so clear. Like before it was like kind of a cool thing, you know, that popped into my head. And now I know like what, or at least now what that's what that means to me. And that's how like music and art is too over time, you know, that I love and you love, you know, you revisit it and you might find something different there.
You mentioned, you know, music being this thing that kind of eased some of the tumult that you might have experienced. When you found music and creativity, then did you find yourself kind of becoming protective of it? Whatever I do in life, I have to have this.
Yes, I don't know that I had the wherewithal to recognize that, like, at the time, necessarily, because my mom's a music teacher, so I grew up single mom, sisters, music teacher, and I played. She kind of, like, when I was real young, she said, you know, like, pick an instrument, and, you know, of course, the choices are not, like, drums or electric guitar, they're, like, piano, violin, like, whatever, so I played violin for a long time, and then I hit a point where I was, like, I just want to, like, make up songs, you know, I really want to, you know. And I had, through somebody that my dad was living next to at the time, had a million guitars. It was like, oh, I'll let him borrow this guitar and amp. And I loved it. And I would sit in my room and just try to learn, like, you know, Secret Agent Man or just anything I could that was like two or three notes, and poorly, you know, maybe some surf tunes like Ventures Walk, Don't Run, and like stuff that I could figure out without having to ask somebody, like simple bar chords. I think I had like a Mel Bay, like, graphic of like 20 chords on it, and that was it. Most of those chords I couldn't even configure, but some of them I could. And that process of doing that and realizing I was not good at guitar, I've gotten a lot better over the years from the solo stuff more than the band, but I learned to play enough that I could convey song ideas or chord structures to things. And then eventually, like when James and I were doing stuff more in depth down the line, it was just an easy language, and we kind of figured out our own way to work that way. But yeah, very protective in a weird sort of way, in that I realized that everything that's like fallen off in my life or come to pass, everything that's come and gone, music is there. And if you told me like, hey, you've got your two boys and you can pick one other thing in life to be defined by or to pursue or whatever till the whenever your end is, it would be music. Like, I wouldn't have to think. That would be it. Like, just let me write songs. I don't care if anybody even hears them. Just that process, you know. I hope somebody hears them, but so yes, I'm protective of it. And probably that same way, you know, we're kind of ensconced in our own little like group. You know, the three of us, we talk about stuff and we're so passionate, like, you know, like, oh, James would be like, I hate that song, right? You know, or I love this song, and all of it matters to me. I want to know why he hates it. I want to know why he loves this, because I feel the same way about stuff. It's just, and other people are like, yeah, you know, like, I heard this song, it's okay. Like, you know, because it's not, it hasn't defined them as much. And that's probably more balanced and better, but I've gone off the diving board. It's too late. We're in the pool. So.
Yeah. I do have a more practical question in a second, but I do get that thing about where it's like, sometimes I'll listen to a lyric and I'm like, well, how would that character know that?
Right.
Like, did they suddenly become omniscient? What the hell?
And the fact that you're taking the time to think that way versus, people will be like, I love that song. And like, I never knew the words. Which I don't know the words to every song either, but like, if I really like the song, it's going to bother me if I have no idea what they're saying, right? I want to know.
I get the sense that with a number of bands that kind of had a kind of starting point, maybe in the 90s or 2000s, they take a break, and now when they come back, there's that flood of people who have discovered them in the interim. They've gone back and they've heard the records.
Yeah.
Did you experience that?
Yeah. You know, I mean, yes and no. We did this show at the Middle East, and we booked it as our record release show as opposed to a greatest hits. And we wanted to clarify that, like, hey, this is for a new record. And John and I were trying to figure out the schedule to, like, okay, if this is how we're doing it today, then there's, you know, single one, number one on Apple Music this day. And then 3 weeks later, it's single, you know, all of that stuff. So we could kind of shove that stuff out into the world, into the universe. So there was some context, but I do feel like in the downtime between like what we've done kind of otherwise a little bit here and there, and just the band hibernating, as it were, Japan is like a weird little touchstone where we have a lot of Japanese people that really like the band. A couple of weird places in Europe. UK always had some. I did some tours with Frank Turner over there, and those were like, he's a large artist over there for like a songwriter sort of thing. I've done some solo tours. So there's some context of the old band there. And then some other places like Germany has some, you know, but yes, I would say in general, in stateside even, you know, it's probably hyper-focused on New England and New York, if I had to pick, you know, New York, New Jersey. But then we've got the connection to Brian McTernan, who was my friend and roommate for years. He's Baltimore, D.C. area, so there's a little, it goes down that far. And then we did, you know, a split with Hot Water Music early on and toured with them a ton. So that kind of radiates down to Florida. So I think that there's some, you know, there's some renewed interest from people that were not there. And then there's like the people that liked us from before, potentially. At the end of the day, and I know this is a cliche, but like, I just want to make some more, you know, we made that record. I'm really proud of the record, and I'm excited about what that allows for the future, if that makes any sense. You know, it's sort of like, that's on the table, so now we can do whatever. We want to make a rock record, we do that. We want to make it, you know. And already James and I are writing. We've already got like multiple ideas, and the record hasn't even been out a month. So it's just a matter of, I want to keep the creative stuff going, and then whatever form that takes. And in the context of like of Spartan, that relationship is great and kind of easy. And so I'm hopeful that that continues. But if it doesn't, and we do it on our own, you know, like it's, I just want to have stuff, you know, when it's all behind you, you just want to have stuff out there. And then it means what it means to people. And people kind of like, I've heard other people say things like, you know, the minute you put it out there, it's no longer your own. And that's kind of like a generalized statement, but I totally understand. Like, you can't, you know, you can play the worst show in the world and have somebody come up afterwards and go, man, I've never seen you better. You know, and conversely, you can go like, man, I felt like we were like on that one. And somebody else is like, it felt really stiff tonight. It was weird, but you know, like, but I had fun. You're like, oh, and so you just realize that there's no reason even to weigh in, you know, it just is what it is. And focus on positive creativity and trying to make something that means something. And then that's all you can do.
You've been listening to a conversation with Josh English of the band 6 Going On 7. You can learn more about the group via their official website, 6goingon7.com. Their new album, Human Tears, is out now via Spartan Records. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. As always, we'd like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.